listing of the verses from the Sri Upanishad. It's listed in the under the pink tab, second to the last. And we'll say the English all the way through first, together. The personality of Godhead is perfect and complete. And because he is completely perfect, all emanations from him, such as this phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped as complete wholes. Whatever is produced of the complete whole is also complete in itself. Because he is the complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. Everything, animate or inanimate, that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and one should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. One may aspire to live for hundreds of years if he continuously goes on working in that way, for that sort of work will not bind him to the law of karma. There is no alternative to this way for man. The killer of the soul, whoever he may be, must enter into the planets known as the worlds of the faithless, full of darkness and ignorance. Although fixed in his abode, the personality of Godhead is swifter than the mind and can overcome all others running. The powerful demigods cannot approach him. Although in one place, he controls those who supply the air and rain. He surpasses all in excellence. The Supreme Lord walks and does not walk. He is far away, but he is very near as well. He is within everything, and yet he is outside of everything. He who sees everything in relation to the Supreme Lord, who sees all living entities as his parts and parcels, and who sees the Supreme Lord within everything, never hates anything or any being. One who always sees all living entities as spiritual sparks in quality one with the Lord becomes a true knower of things. What then can be illusion or anxiety for him? Such a person must factually know the greatest of all, the personality of Godhead, who is unembodied, omniscient, beyond reproach, without veins, pure and uncontaminated, the self-sufficient philosopher who has been fulfilling everyone's desire since time immemorial. Those who engage in the culture of nescient activities shall enter into the darkest region of ignorance. Worse still are those engaged in the culture of so-called knowledge. The wise have explained that one result is derived from the culture of knowledge and that a different result is obtained from the culture of nescience. Only one who can learn the process of nescience and that of transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality. Those who are engaged in the worship of demigods enter into the darkest region of ignorance, and still more so do the worshippers of the impersonal absolute. It is said that one result is obtained by worshipping the supreme cause of all causes, and then another result is obtained by worshipping what is not supreme. All this is heard from the undisturbed authorities who clearly explained it. One should know perfectly the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna and his transcendental name, form, qualities, and pastimes, as well as the temporary material creation with its temporary demigods, men, and animals. When one knows these, he surpasses death and the ephemeral cosmic manifestation with it, and in the eternal kingdom of God, he enjoys his eternal life of bliss and knowledge. O my Lord, sustainer of all that lives, your real face is covered by your dazzling effulgence. Kindly remove that covering and exhibit yourself to your pure devotee. O my Lord, O primeval philosopher, maintainer of the universe, O regulating principle, destination of the pure devotees, well-wisher of the progenitors of mankind, please remove the effulgence of your transcendental rays so that I can see your form of bliss. You are the eternal supreme personality of Godhead, like unto the sun, as am I. Let this temporary body be burnt to ashes, and let the air of life be merged with the totality of air. Now, O my Lord, please remember all my sacrifices, and because you are the ultimate beneficiary, please remember all that I have done for you. O my Lord, as powerful as fire, O omnipotent one, now I offer you all obeisances, falling on the ground at your feet. O my Lord, please lead me on the right path to reach you, and since you know all that I have done in the past, please free me from the reactions to my past sins, so there will be no hindrance to my progress. And now go back to the beginning, and we're going to sing the Sanskrit all the way through. Om. Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnam Udachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vishishyate Isavasam Midang Sarvam Yatkincha Jagatyam Jagat Tena Tyaktena Punjita Magridha Kasya Sridhanam Kurvane Veha Karmadi Jijivi Shekshatam Samaha Evam Tvai Nanyate Tosti Nakarma Lipite Nare Asurya Namate Loka Antena Tamasavritaha Tamste Pratyabhigishchanti Yeke Chatmahano Janaha Ane jade kam manaso javiyo naina deva apnuvan purvanarshat tadhavato jnana te titishtat tasmina poma tarishva dadati tadejati tannaijati tadure tadvantike tarantarasya sarvasya tadu sarvasya syabhayataha Yastu sarvani bhutani atmani vanupashyati sarvabhuteshu chatmanam tato na vidjagupsate Yasmin sarvani bhutani atmai vadbudvijanataha tatra ko mohakashoka ekatvam anupashyataha saparya chakshukram akayam avranam asnaviram shudham apapavidham Kavir manishi paribhu swayam pur yathat yatyotortan vyarajast taspyati pyasamabhyaha andantama pravishanti ye vidyam upasate tato puya ivate tamo yau vidyayam brataha anyadeva ahura vidyaya anyadahura vidyaya Iti shushrumatiranam yenastad vichichakshire vidyam cha yas tadvedo payam saha avidyayam ratum tirdva vidyayam ratum ashnute andam tama pravishanti ye sambutim upasate tato puya ivate tamo yau sambutyam rataha Anyadeva hura sambhavad, anyadahura sambhavad, iti shushrumatiranam yenastad vichichakshide, sambutim cha vinashan cha yastad vedo payam saha, vinashenam ratum tirtva sambutyam ratum ashnute, hiranmayena patrena satyasa pihitam mukam, Tatvam Pushan Napavrenu Satya Dharmaya Drishtaye Pushan Nikarshe Yama Surya Prajapatya Vyuharasmin Samuha Tejo Yate Rupam Kalyana Tamam Tate Pashamiyo Savasa Purusha Somasmi Vayur Anilam Amratam Atedam Bashmantam Shariram Om Kratosmara Kritam Smara Kratosmara kritam smara Agne naya supataraya asman Vishvani deva varinani vidvan Yuyadyasmas chuharana meno Bhuishtam te nama uktim vidhema Ramananda, can you see if you can tack that back up again? Thank you. Shishupanishad Sampurnam Hari Om. And now we're reading from the book itself. And back at Mantra 10. We started this a few weeks ago and only got through partway in the purport. If you look on page number 69, the verse is, I'll say, please repeat, Anyadivahur Vidyaya Iti shushumad hiranam. Yinas tad vichachakshire. Anyat, different. Eva, certainly. Ahu, said. Vidyaya, by culture of knowledge. Anyat, different. Ahu, said. Avidyaya, by culture of nations. Iti, thus. Sushruma, I heard. Dhiranam, from the sober. Ye, who, na, to us. Tat, that. Vichachakshire, explained. Translation. The wise have explained that one result is derived from the culture of knowledge, and that a different result is obtained from the culture of nations. Please repeat. The wise have explained that one result is derived from the culture of knowledge, and that a different result is obtained from the culture of nations. Purport. Trishab, could please look up culture. As advised in chapter 13 of the Bhagavad Gita, you need a dictionary? As advised in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, 13.8 through 12, one should culture knowledge in the following way. 1. One should become a perfect gentleman and learn to give proper respect to others. 2. One should not pose himself as a religionist simply for name and fame. 3. One should not become a source of anxiety to others by the actions of his body, by the thoughts of his mind, or by his words. 4. One should learn forbearance even in the face of provocation from others. 5. One should learn to avoid duplicity in his dealings with others. 6. One should search out a bona fide spiritual master who can lead him gradually to the stage of spiritual realization, and one must submit himself to such a spiritual master, render him service, and ask relevant questions. 7. In order to approach the platform of self-realization, one must follow the regulative principles enjoined in the revealed scriptures. 8. One must be fixed in the tenets of the revealed scriptures. 9. One should completely refrain from practices which are detrimental to the interest of self-realization. 10. One should not accept more than he required for the maintenance of the body. 11. One should not falsely identify himself with the gross material body, nor should one consider those who are related to his body to be his own. Twelve, one should always remember that as long as he has a material body, he must face the miseries of repeated birth, old age, disease, and death. There is no use in making plans to get rid of these miseries of the material body. The best course is to find out the means by which one may regain his spiritual identity. 13. One should not be attached to more than the necessities of life required for spiritual advancement. 14. One should not be more attached to wife, children, and home than the revealed scriptures ordain. 15. One should not be happy or distressed over desirables and undesirables, knowing that such feelings are just created by the mind. 16. One should become an unalloyed devotee of the personality of Godhead Shri Krishna and serve him with rapt attention. 17. One should develop a liking for residence in a secluded place with a calm and quiet atmosphere favorable for spiritual culture, and one should avoid congested places where non-devotees congregate. 18. One should become a scientist or philosopher and conduct research into spiritual knowledge, recognizing that spiritual knowledge is permanent, whereas material knowledge ends with the death of the body. These 18 items combine to form a gradual process by which real knowledge can be developed. Except for these, all other methods are considered to be in the category of nations. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, a great acharya, maintained that all forms of material knowledge are merely external features of the illusory energy, and that by culturing them, one becomes no better than an ass. This same principle is found here in Sri Ashupanishad. By advancement of material knowledge, modern man is simply being converted into an ass. Some materialistic politicians in spiritual guise decry the present system of civilization as satanic, but unfortunately they do not care about the culture of real knowledge as it is described in the Bhagavad Gita. Thus they cannot change the satanic situation. In modern society, even a boy thinks himself self-sufficient and pays no respect to elderly men. Due to the wrong type of education being imparted in our universities, boys all over the world are giving their elders headaches. Thus, Sri Ishapanishad very strongly warns that the culture of nescience is different from that of knowledge. The universities are, so to speak, centers of nescience only. Consequently, scientists are busy discovering lethal weapons to wipe out the existence of other countries. University students today are not given instructions in the regulative principles of brahmacharya, celibate student life, nor do they have any faith in any scriptural injunctions. Religious principles are taught for the sake of name and fame only, and not for the sake of practical action. Thus, there is animosity not only in social and political fields, but in the field of religion as well. Nationalism has developed in different parts of the world due to the cultivation of nations by the general people. No one considers that this tiny earth is just a lump of matter floating in immeasurable space along with many other lumps. In comparison to the vastness of space, these material lumps are like dust particles in the air. Because God has kindly made these lumps of matter complete in themselves, they are perfectly equipped with all necessities for floating in space. The drivers of our spaceships may be very proud of their achievements, but they do not consider the supreme driver of these greater, more gigantic spaceships called planets. There are innumerable suns and innumerable planetary systems also. As infinitesimal parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, we small creatures are trying to dominate these unlimited planets. Thus we take repeated birth and death and are generally frustrated by old age and disease. The span of human life is scheduled for about 100 years, although it is gradually decreasing to 20 or 30 years. Thanks to the culture of nations, befooled men have created their own nations within these planets in order to grasp sense enjoyment more effectively for these few years. Such foolish people draw up various plans to render national demarcations perfectly, a task that is totally impossible. Yet for this purpose, each and every nation has become a source of anxiety for others. More than 50% of a nation's energy is devoted to defense measures and thus spoiled. No one cares for the cultivation of real knowledge, yet people are falsely proud of being advanced in both material and spiritual knowledge. Sri Ishapanishad warns us of this faulty type of education, and the Bhagavad Gita gives instructions as to the development of real knowledge. This mantra states that the instructions of vidya, knowledge, must be acquired from a dhira. A dhira is one who is not disturbed by material illusion. No one can be undisturbed unless he is perfectly spiritually realized, at which time one neither hankers nor laments for anything. A dhira realizes that the material body and mind he has acquired by chance through material association are but foreign elements. Therefore, he simply makes the best use of a bad bargain. I repeat, a dhira realizes that the body and mind he has acquired by chance through material association are but foreign elements. Therefore, he simply makes the best use of a bad bargain. Worth the price of admission right there to hear that. The material body and mind are bad bargains for the spiritual living entity. The living entity has actual functions in the living spiritual world, but this material world is dead. As long as the living spiritual sparks manipulate the dead lumps of matter, the dead world appears to be a living world. Actually, it is the living souls, the parts and parcels of the supreme living being, who move the world. The dhiras have come to know all these facts by hearing them from superior authorities and have realized this knowledge by following the regulative principles. To follow the regular principles, one must take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. The transcendental message and regulative principles come down from the spiritual master to the disciple. Such knowledge does not come in the hazardous way of nescient education. One can become a dhira only by submissively hearing from a bona fide spiritual master. Arjuna, for example, became adhira by submissively hearing from Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead himself. Thus, the perfect disciple must be like Arjuna, and the spiritual master must be as good as the Lord himself. This is the process of learning vidya, knowledge, from the dhira, the undisturbed. An adhira, one who has not undergone the training of a dhira, cannot be an instructive leader. Modern politicians who pose themselves as dhiras are actually adhiras, and one cannot expect perfect knowledge from them. They are simply busy seeing to their own renunciation in dollars and cents. They are simply busy seeing to their own remuneration in dollars and cents. How then can they lead the mass of people to the right path of self-realization? Thus, one must hear submissively from a dhira in order to attain actual education. So let's hear what you heard, what stuck in your mind so far. Go ahead. Okay. Minus 3 points. Microphone is plus 10.
The meaning of culture is the act of developing the intellectual and moral faculties, especially by education.
Say it again.
The act of developing the intellectual...
The act of developing...
The intellectual and moral faculties...
The act of developing intellectual and moral facilities...
Faculties. Especially by education.
Especially by education. Intellectual and moral faculties, especially by education. The act of developing intellectual and moral faculties, especially by the act of education. Just see, it's an act of developing intellectual and moral faculties, especially by the act of education. Yes, culture.
Culture.
Moral faculties.
Especially by education.
Especially by education. So one thing is you have to act. It's an act. You have to act of developing intellectual and moral. So not just that it's a theoretical point, but also you have to develop character. You have to do a sense of morality. Look up morality. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Morality is... conformity to ideals of right human conduct.
Conformity to ideas of right human conduct. So, like four regulative principles and the ways in which we conduct ourselves in the world, culturing that, it's an act to develop those, especially through education. So the culture of knowledge is different from the culture of nations. Thank you very much. That was valuable. And where does the word culture come from?
It comes from the word cultivation. I'll check it.
Cultivation as a noun. Culture.
It comes from the cultivated land, Middle English, cultivated land, cultivation from Anglo-French, from Latin, which is... cultura, from cultus.
Means?
It does not say that, but it says from cultivated land and cultivation, from Middle English.
All right. I mean, the meaning has something to do with farming then also. You know, you have to take the trouble to go out and plant the, make sure the field is ready and then put the seeds in and take care of them. It's a big deal. I mean, you have to look after them. Some kind of culture. How come it doesn't say what it means originally?
It says from Latin cultus, which is a past participle of colere, but it does not say the meaning of colere.
Anybody have a better dictionary? Huh? Google Maharaj. Swami Google Ananda. So, culture of knowledge and the culture of nations. What? Yes, what do you have? We'll definitely need a microphone back there.
I don't have the original, but I just wanted to comment that you were asking that what did we hear when you were reading. So I had actually looked up the meaning of culture, and one of the meanings here was the behaviors and beliefs, characteristic, the sum total of ways of living built up by a group of human beings and transmitted from one generation to another. And I was kind of tying that together to where Prabhupada says towards the end of the purport that when you get knowledge, nowadays we're just going to go to universities and get all materialist knowledge, but the right way of getting knowledge is to find a spiritual master who will pass it down from, you know, down the disciplic succession, and that is what culture is.
Yeah.
You know, here they're talking about passing from one generation to another generation.
Nice, good point, excellent. What else? What did you hear that struck you? Anything so far? Krishna Prana.
I heard that the material birth is a bad bargain.
It's a bad bargain. Good for you. Yes, it's a bad bargain. Somehow or other, by coming in contact with matter, we've acquired this bad bargain. So what do you do with a bad bargain? Make the best use of it. You just got ripped off, and now you'd say, okay, now what am I going to do? Make the best use of this bad bargain. Good. What else? What else did you hear? You heard something.
We should hear Vidya, the right knowledge from Dhira, a person who is undisturbed authority. And hearing like Avidya from the politicians are like Adhiras, who we can't expect perfect knowledge from the universities or politicians or anybody. We have to approach a right bona fide spiritual authority and to get the knowledge.
Thank you very much. Very good, important point. What else did you hear?
Hare Krishna, I actually liked the 18 points of cultivating knowledge. I really liked them, like scientifically studying about spiritual knowledge and understanding like that. Mm-hmm. I really liked those points.
What did you like about them?
I like that. I remember one in particular, which is scientifically understanding spiritual knowledge. So I really like that because I think that we have a tendency to do scientific study of things, material nature. So if you actually do a very nice scientific study of like difference between material nature and spiritual nature, I think that can really give us a lot of insight and lot of help us, you know, to really connect to the real self. And
So if I understand you correctly, we have a propensity for studying things in detail. So if you make a study of the transcendental science, spiritual science, then it'll be rewarding. Culture of knowledge. Thank you very much. Nice point. What else did you hear that stuck with you or something that you liked that changed your life? And you said, I'm going to go out and use this. From now on, my life's going to be different because of this statement in the purport. What did you hear? Yes, Tarun. Give him the mic. Switch it on.
Hare Krishna. It talks about the real knowledge. So Dhira is the person who is equipped with the real knowledge. And I think it's trying to say like whatever we gain or as a culture from our parents, from society, it's all false and that goes away with your death. So whatever the real knowledge that one, we should be after that and that... bargaining, they are saying that we should make and go after it.
After the spiritual knowledge, okay.
Yeah.
What we get from society and from our parents and so on, and it may not be false, depending on what kind of family and society we come from. It may be temporary. It's a better word, actually, temporary, because... that kind of knowledge pertains only to my bodily existence, and it is it won't last after the body is finished. Of course, if one comes in a family that's passing down spiritual knowledge, or in a society or in a culture that is organized in such a way that I can culture spiritual knowledge, then I'm fortunate to have that. Yes.
Ruji, I also noticed that Prabhupada in the purport has referenced, not quoting them exactly, but he has referenced the other verses from Ishopanishad, where he talks about the planets are capable, they are complete in themselves, and that's why they're equipped with everything that is needed for them to float in the air. So that's the invocation mantra, Om Purnamada. And then later on he also talks about that we should not take more than necessary. So that's the first verse where it talks about whatever is your quota, just use that and don't look at others.
You found that helpful?
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
In what way? How did that...
Actually, when you were... When you were reading that particular part, like don't buy more than the quota, I was thinking about that. I used to exactly do that. I was so fond of buying dishes and plates and things like that. So my house is now full of like 100 plates. And you know, I was just thinking like my husband and I just use 2 plates at a time.
Good point.
And another thing that also struck me was the verse itself. It says that, you know, if you do this, then you get this result. And if you do that, you will get that result. So one should not think that, you know, I can do anything and I'll get the same result. So that I found very powerful.
Yeah, much to the point of the verse to help us organize our life in such a way that we're going in the right direction. The idea that I can do anything I want or expose myself to anything I want. And I should be aware of the fact that there are consequences. And that's why the word culture is very important, because it's an act. That's according to the definition we heard from Trishub from the Merriam-Webster dictionary, online dictionary, that says it's an act of developing intellectual and moral values, and especially through education. And so we have to act in such a way. That means we have to organize ourselves in such a way that we're developing these kind of qualities through exposure to vidya and not avidya. What do you have, Yashoda Kumar? He's on to a verse. Okay, Manish?
Not exactly, but I heard like how politicians, they are just feeding themselves, so how they can take care of the praja, the common people. First, the only aim of their has to like feed themselves, like to how to accumulate more money through this post. How can they can think of the welfare of the people? So that is very practical. I can see that how it makes change when you do something selflessly, when you do selflessly. And currently the society...
But can a politician act selflessly?
He should act.
He should act. So there are politicians that can act selflessly, right? Yeah. I mean, there is somebody's got to be a politician. The kings, kshatriyas, they're politicians, right? Yeah. So there is in human society, in the chaturvanya maya shishtam guna karma vibhagasha, there is a way in which certain people are qualified for some posts, like kshatriyas, who have to take to politics. They can collect taxes, and then their responsibility is to protect the citizens from any kind of attacks from others. They have to make sure society is peaceful and so on. But then there's a difference in politicians. One may be Duryodhan. Of course, you know, ultimately... Under his rulership, some people were happy. But then he was unjust. He didn't want the Pandavas to come back and take their share of the kingdom. So much intrigue and politics in the Mahabharata, right? Pandavas were almost killed in the house of Shalak, and they had to escape. They had to go incognito for so many years in the forest. And then when they came back, there were negotiations. Even Krishna went to talk to Duryodhan and to try to convince him to give the Pandavas at least something. And he wouldn't, five villages, and he said not as much land as on the head of a pin, right? He even tried to capture Krishna and tie him up. Krishna manifested his, partially his universal form. So the politicians are there. But generally that kind of lifestyle, that post has inherent in it duplicity, one of the faults. So vidyam cha vidyam chayas. Anyar evahur vidyaya anyar ahur avidyaya iti shushumadhiranam yenas tadvich chakshide. And so shushruma, by hearing from the dhira, if we hear this spiritual knowledge, it's coming down from the perfect source. And who's the perfect source? Krishna. So it gets passed down, and those who hear that perfect knowledge, they develop a clear idea. They're able to culture an understanding of their relationship with this world, their understanding of the relationship with God, and also they can develop morality and proper conduct. Pramanais tat sadacharais tadabhyaser nirantaram bodhayanat manatmanam bhaktimapyutamam labhet. That is, by scriptural knowledge, by theistic conduct and practicing the regulative principles and so forth. And pramanais tat rabhyas, tarabhyasar, by practice, by good contact and by practice. Then gradually one can develop these qualities. Yashoda Kumar, you have the verse? You found something? Let's hear what he got.
I heard a few times when Srila Prabhupada explained culture, he used this verse from Niti Shastra. It's in the Shloka books.
What page?
436.
466?
436.
In your Shloka book, 436.
Matritvat paradarishu, paradravishu loshtravat, atmavat sarva bhutishu, yah pashyati sa panditaha. One who sees other lives as his mother, who sees all other possessions as insignificant as a lump of clay, and who sees all living beings as himself, such a person is considered a learned man.
And why did you pick that out?
I heard a few times as Srila Prabhupada explained culture this way. He said real culture means these three things.
This is real culture. To see all women except one's wife as mother, all other people's possessions as untouchable garbage. Just leave it alone. It's not yours. That you see all others, you treat others the way you want to be treated. Right? And what was the last one? Possessions and all living beings as itself. So three things. Such a person is considered to be a learned person. This is a real culture of vidya, to have see and act like that. You had a point, Dikshit. Did you make your point already? Do you want to make it? Okay.
Something that inspired me is like last point, one should become a scientist or philosopher or conduct research into spiritual knowledge. So I was thinking about this 18 points, how can they be organized? So the first 7 or 8 points tell us how to come to the platform of self-realization by good conduct or by adopting the culture of treating other women as mother and all this, learning forbearance, avoiding duplicity. So once we come into the platform of self-realization, the next few points tell us how can one, and also one of the other thing is approaching the spiritual master. One comes to the platform of self-realization, and the next set of points are how can one be in the platform of self-realization, how can one be situated there, avoiding which things, like avoiding attachment to the material body, and also attachment to home, wife, beyond that which is prescribed. And also at the end, how can one advance in these platforms? That is described in the third set of points. So that's very inspiring how this one point inspired me to analyze different sets of things in this.
And how does that help you to see it in categories like that? How does it help us?
It helps me when I'm in doubt of, say, if I am, if someone is, say, each thing, if there is a provocation, then if I don't learn to be, if I don't exhibit forbearance there, then I'm not in the platform, not in the platform of soul, but in the platform of mind, just trying to fight for my own false ego.
That I understand, but my point is by putting them into specific categories.
Yeah.
You have a penchant for that, obviously. So how does that help you? How does that help? I'm sure it does. I'm just wanting to, I want to, from your perspective, why you do that.
Analysis is like breaking up things that helps you remember stuff, and also that helps you speak organizedly. Mm. Say, if someone asks me, okay, what are these 18 points? Then I could easily say, okay, these are the three things I learned, how to come into the platform and how to be situated and how to advance in the platform. And these are the things specifically. All the 18 things are difficult to remember, but these three things and then dividing them into, that helps.
Thank you. It did help. And the fact that we do have these items, now this is taken from the Bhagavad Gita in the 13th chapter, verses 8 through 12. And Krishna is listing elements which are knowledge, vidya. And he said anything that's not on the list is avidya, it's ignorance. And that's helpful to have that list and know what is actually the process of knowledge. And many of these things are sort of intangibles. It's not something you learn necessarily at a university, like humility, pridelessness, nonviolence, approaching a bona fide spiritual master. These are items that are Krishna's listing as the process of knowledge. And by culturing those, by through an act of learning them in one's and assimilating one in life, then we come to the stage of dhira, steadiness. We're not disturbed. That's indicated in the verse from the Niti Shastra. See all women except for one's wife as mother. Because the tendency is that lust is so powerful that one wants to enjoy this world, and the main attractive force, male for female, female for male, it's combination. Pumsastriya maitunibhava metam tayo mitu hridaya grantamahu atogriya kshetrasutaptavitar janasya muhu yamahamameti. There's a natural attraction between male and female in every species. And then when they join together, sexual union, then there's this knot in the heart, and there's this connection that together we will stand up against the onslaught of material nature, and we will survive. And then one has to have a fortress and build and have a field and a place to take care of one's little fiefdom. And then one comes under the spell of illusion, thinking in terms of I and mine. Because of the bodily conception of life, that's what specifically solidifies it. So one who has a healthy understanding of the danger of this world, of danger of unrestrictedly interacting with the world and the three modes of material nature and such, is a learned person. Someone who's unrestricted in the way they interact with the world is a fool. And they're compared to a moth who plays with a flame and will inevitably will be killed by that. So unless I develop this kind of understanding that if I don't restrict my senses and develop a sense for what's actually spiritually healthy, then I will be doomed. Yes.
I checked out the etymology of culture.
You did?
Yes, Prabhu.
This is big news. Let's hear it.
It's Prabhu coming from the word Latin cultura, which is figuratively, its meaning is cultivating agriculture. Figuratively, it's care culture, and which comes from colere, which means to guard and tend, cultivate, and till.
To guard, cultivate, tend, and till. Guard, guard?
Guard, cultivate, tend, and till.
Tend, and till. Guard, tend, and till.
Till means
guard and tend. Got you guard, like my garden. I just put in new flowers, and I'm guarding them now. I go out and look to see if the slugs or snails have come out, if they've discovered them yet. And I usually try to persuade them not to dine on those flowers, at least not until they get bigger. Guard and then tending. As they say, the best fertilizer is a gardener's shadow. It means if you're always there, you'll notice things and you take care of the plants. So this cultivation means you really have to tend and you have to be there for it. Yes.
Prabhu, I'm just thinking that anything, Prabhu, that you guard for long enough time, it becomes a part of you. So it's like culture, Prabhu. It's become a part of your personality. So anything that you guard for long enough.
How is that? Something that you guard, it becomes a part of you.
Because, Prabhu, you are basically, it's becoming part of your thought process, and you're including it in your thought process, and it will basically over time, it will become, you will start accepting it more and more and more, and you're guarding it, continuing to guard it, and you know, reinforcing it, and that way it will become a part of your thought process, and it will become part of your you, basically.
Okay. I'll accept that premise. And you know what? I'm going to read the purport again, and this time listen to the points that we brought up already, and then see if you can't find something that you didn't knew that you're going to take home with you that you didn't hear the last time, okay? To do this, I'm going to need a drink of water. You ready?
Yes.
You all ready?
Yes.
Here goes. Only one who can learn the process, The wise have explained that one result is derived from the culture of knowledge and that a different result is obtained from the culture of nations. Purport. As advised in chapter 13 of the Bhagavad Gita, 13:8-12, one should culture knowledge in the following way. One should become a perfect gentleman and learn to give proper respect to others. 2, one should not pose himself as a religionist simply for name and fame. 3, one should not become a source of anxiety to others by the actions of his body, by the thoughts of his mind, or by his words. 4, one should learn forbearance even in the face of provocation from others. 5, one should learn to avoid duplicity in his dealings with others. 6, one should search out a bona fide spiritual master who can lead him gradually to the stage of spiritual realization, and one must submit himself to such a spiritual master, render him service, and ask relevant questions. 7, in order to approach the platform of self-realization, one must follow the regulative principles enjoined in the revealed scriptures. 8, one must be fixed in the tenets of revealed scriptures. 9, one should completely refrain from practices which are detrimental to the interest of self-realization. 10, one should not accept more than he requires for the maintenance of the body. 11, one should not falsely identify himself with the gross material body, nor should one consider those who are related to the body to be his own. 12, one should always remember that as long as he has a material body, he must face the miseries of repeated birth, old age, disease, and death. There is no use in making plans to get rid of these miseries of the material body. There is no use in making plans to get rid of these miseries of the material body. There is no use in making plans to get rid of these miseries of the material body. The best course is to find out the means by which one may regain his spiritual identity. I'm going to stop there and see if there's anything new that you heard since the last time we read the purport 15 minutes ago. Yes, Charlene.
What does it mean to avoid duplicity?
We have our technical team here. We'll give you the exact definition. Yes.
Just a couple of things came into my mind. One is that one should not become a source of anxiety to others by the actions of his body, but the thoughts of his mind are by his words. How can we understand how one can become the source of anxiety to others by the thoughts of his mind?
Oh, I thought you were questioning how we can understand how not to become. You really want to know how one can become a source of anxiety for others? Because I can sure tell you about that. Well, how to become a source of anxiety for others? Generally, it arises from somebody who's self-interested. When we're self-centered, when I want my own sense gratification, we generally conflict with others. For instance, because my tongue has unrestricted desires, or I allow my tongue liberty, then people set up restaurants so they can sit there and eat animals. It's not necessary. And it certainly causes grief to others. Whole families of animals get disrupted and, slaughtered and things like that because of that. And in all situations, when I'm considering how to serve Krishna, and I'm following the basic ideas in the Bhagavad Gita, that Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita, one of the most sweet chapters, which I recommend that you add to your repertoire, just read it every day, the chapter 12 of Bhagavad Gita. It only takes 5 minutes. Why not, out of 24 hours a day, always read chapter 12 of Bhagavad Gita? Tell your boss you're not coming in, if that's what it takes. All right, here it is. In chapter 12, Krishna says, one who is not envious, don't be envious. Don't be envious of others. When you're envious of others, you cause pain to other people. But as a kind friend to all living beings, who does not think himself a proprietor, and who is free from false ego. So there's four ideas right there about how to not. And you can just reverse these. If you want to disturb people, then become envious of them. Don't be their friend. Consider yourself the proprietor of everything they own, and be full of false ego, who is equal in both happiness and distress, who is tolerant, so who is disturbed he's elated in happiness and morose in distress, and who is intolerant of others. This is how to disturb other people. I'm giving you both sides. Always satisfied, always dissatisfied. You ever been around somebody who's always dissatisfied? Aren't they disturbing to you? Self-controlled, completely licentious and unself-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination. Well, engaged in devotional service with lack of determination. We're not engaged in devotional service. His mind and intelligence fixed on me. His mind and intelligence fixed on sense gratification. I'm giving the second option is somebody who would be disturbing to others. So when you hear this soothing balm of Krishna's words, of what he likes, it gives you permission to not keep the status quo and interact with the material nature, and save you from so much trouble. To not have false ego. False ego is a burden that I carry around everywhere I go. And these material desires that have developed from a time immemorial by interaction with the modes of material nature are an affliction. This lust and anger, particularly, we're servants. I become a servant of these here in the material world. I must serve these bad masters. And when I do, it disturbs me, and then I disturb others. Does that help? Okay. So just follow what Krishna says. As he says at the end of this chapter, one who follows this imperishable path. So this is an imperishable path. These qualities are, you know, things that you should follow. Yes, a follow-up question.
No, this is not a follow-up, but this is another question regarding one of the points we discussed.
Yes.
This is what Prabhuji brought up.
Yashoda Kumar?
Yashoda Kumar Prabhu, regarding, one quote from Niti Shastra, in that he gave the definition of a learned man. There he said, the first thing it says is one who sees others' wives as his mother. And of course, in our organization, we actually call every female as mother. It's not only one's wife, you know, anyone. So why, in that verse, everyone is, all the girls are excluded except those who are married only?
What's that?
My question is, if I see others, I mean, there are others' daughters also who are not wives of others still. So why they are excluded in that verse?
I don't get it.
So it says only one who sees others' wives as mothers, right? And there are so many unmarried girls also. They are not yet wives of any, you know, any person.
What the verse says? One who sees others' wives as his mother, and who sees others' possessions.
Page number 436.
Paradara issue. Well, everyone's Krishna's wife. So, really, we should see like that. Ultimately, we should see like that. Even with our own wife, we should understand that this is Krishna's. This Krishna's belongs to Krishna, Krishna's servant. So we should interact with all living entities like that as servants, and see how can I best, you know, serve that person. Does that help?
Okay, so that was should really be one who sees every woman as his mother, right? That should be the correct way of reading
it. Yeah, and then that's how it's often expressed. It just gave a very literal translation of this, you know, from a culture where everyone's married practically, from a time they're 9 years old, so... Yes, Charlene and Dixit.
What about the duplicity?
Here it comes. We have from our technical department.
Okay. I have the meaning of duplicity. The meaning of duplicity is contradictory doubleness of thought, speech, or action.
So we shouldn't trick other people into believing something that we don't believe, or
yeah, be straightforward. It means
we shouldn't lead people on. We should just be
It causes a lot of problems and mental anguish in our lives and the lives of others when we're not straightforward. When we're straightforward and truthless and not duplicitous, which means to say one thing, mean another, to lie, be double-faced, as they say. I say one thing to a person's face and behind his back I'll criticize him. These are examples of being duplicitous.
Or if you're asking people, if you're trying to find out how a person, you should just, never mind.
Well, I mean, there are social circumstances in which you may have to lie. Now, it's not recommended, but Prabhupada mentions in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that every endeavor is covered with some sort of fault, just as fire is covered by smoke. So he says that... For a person who is a Vaishya, that means a merchant, he'll say, oh yes, we're not making a profit on this today. We're just selling it below cost. And that's a lie, because otherwise he wouldn't be selling it at all. But
it's someone's job to do that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. When it's somebody's job to do that, then it's not sinful.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Unfortunately. No, but that's the way it is. Okay. Dixit, you had a point? And then we're back to Trishab.
I mean, it struck on me, when Chanakya wrote many things based on the context. When he says others' wives, also the paradara issue. A girl is in the protection of the father when she's not in marriage. Mm-hmm. That is one understanding. Mm-hmm. Second understanding is that back then the Vedic culture is every girl is married right when they're even in the children's stage, you know. In that way, it fits the meaning.
Yeah.
In two ways.
Yeah. Question.
I had a question about duplicity, which is that I'm not able to understand that the Krishna, who is God and he's Supreme God. So generally, using we would expect, you know, that he is never duplicitous. But we have occasions like Airavat, in which he told all about the elephant, in which he basically tricked the other party into by some kind of duplicity. So how do we, you know, understand that, basically, of Krishna, nature of Krishna, basically?
Well, we can. How do we understand the nature of Krishna? We can see in our own nature, we have the tendency to be duplicitous. So where does that come from? It comes from Krishna, because janmad yasya yataha, everything emanates from Krishna. But when I steal, it's abominable. But when Krishna steals, it's glorified. He becomes glorified as Makanchor, because he's the absolute truth, and whatever he does is all good, because he can't become contaminated. And for those who are devotees, they see the what appear to be anomalies. To others, those are ornaments. They become the source of great satisfaction. Like Mother Yashoda was charmed by Krishna's stealing propensities and such. Yes, Charlene.
Is watching and observing someone considered to be part of being duplicity?
Watching and observing
like
somebody?
Like without saying something, or would that be considered duplicity? Do you know what I mean?
If you were spying on them, it would.
Well,
be.
Not spying. No, like if you're,
this would be more like towards duplicitous if you were eavesdropping and you're pretending you weren't listening, but you were listening, actually. That's duplicitous. It means you're pretending to be one way, but you're actually another way. So eavesdropping, listening to somebody when you're not supposed to be, and you're acting like you're not, but you actually are. That's the meaning of duplicitous. You understand? You're acting one way, but you're actually intending something else. Double faced. I'm going to keep going. Now. Get something out of this. I'm going to read this next. Grab something that you can take with you and that you can apply in your life that will change everything from this day forward. Trishab got it already. Okay, go ahead.
I just said, Prabhu, with like anything else for you wanted to say on that, Prabhu, like Krishna's duplicity. Anything else you wanted to say on anything else you can say on that, Prabhu?
Anything else I can say about Krishna's duplicity? Well, when Krishna performs any activity, it's all good for everyone. And by his activity, he accomplishes many things at the same time. So what appears to be duplicitous, actually, or what appears to be an anomaly, actually is Krishna's plan to bring about many different progressive things at the same time. When he ran away, was being chased by Kaliyavana, and Kaliyavana kept saying, you know, come back here and fight, and Krishna was walking away from the battle, and Krishna had in mind that he would take him into the cave and have him interact with Muchukunda. And Muchukunda had been sleeping there because he had a benediction from the demigods that he could stay asleep for thousands of years, and that anybody who woke him up, he would be able to burn to ashes with his eyes. And so Krishna led this Kaliyavana into the cave, and then Kaliyavana was looking around to find Krishna, and he saw Muchukunda sleeping on the ground there, and he thought that Krishna was being a coward, that he was trying to pretend that he was sleeping, so he went up and kicked him. And Muchukunda opened his eyes and he burned Kaliyavana. So although it appeared that Krishna was running away from Kalyavana, he gave an opportunity. Kalyavana, he didn't want to deal with him because he was an untouchable person, so he let Muchukunda do that service and burn him to ashes with his eyes. So whenever Krishna is performing any kind of pastime, whatever it appears to be from a relative point of view, he has an absolute design behind it. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. How can be somebody who can be untouchable for a god, because he is a part of a god, everything is a part of a god, and he is also spirit. So how can be untouchable for a, because he is a part of, he is a servant, he is meant to be an eternal servant, but maybe because of conditioning he is now a different, maybe, but how can be any spirit can be untouchable?
Well, no one is untouchable. That was a part of his leela, that he was treating him like that. But there is, he makes ultimately no consideration like that. Samaham sarvabhuteshu nami dveshostina paraha. He sees everyone equally, neither high nor low. But when someone is sympathetic towards him, when somebody is surrendered to him, then he takes that person as a friend and a devotee, and he reciprocates.
And also it is mentioned that...
You'll notice when Krishna kills, it's as good as his protecting. In fact, in the prayers that Uddhava gives when he's remembering Krishna, Vidura and Uddhava met, and Vidura said, can you say something to remembering the Supreme Lord? So Uddhava began remembering the pastimes of Krishna. And in those pastimes, he remembered how he killed many demons on the battlefield. And he said, actually, I consider those demons more fortunate than the devotees. Because at the time of death, they saw the Lord coming down on the back of Garuda and then killing them. So they're more fortunate because they got liberation. You know, they saw the Lord at the time of death. And out of ecstasy, it was a kind of ecstasy, but he was saying, the demons are more fortunate than me. I can't get anything. A devotee feels like that I'm not very fortunate, but the demons are so fortunate. But it brings up a point about this, you know, the Lord's activities are absolute. If he kills someone or if he protects them, both are good. You know, he might trick somebody and they might be killed, but it's for their own good. When they are killed, then they attain benefit. Shishupal was, Krishna killed him by cutting off his head with his chakra. And Kamsa, although he was an uncle and he wasn't to be killed, seems duplicitous and immoral on Krishna's part, but as part of the leela, he killed Kamsa, and Kamsa was killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it was all good. He was great. He was liberated because of that.
I have another question, yeah. Similar related only. It is mentioned that Krishna doesn't like or hate anybody, and also he just likes whoever surrenders to him, but he doesn't hate anybody. So that is what I heard. And one more, so he hates whoever is hurting devotees, whoever he is liking, that is whoever is surrendered to Krishna, if they are hurting him, he hates, basically he kills or hates him, or give trouble to them. But anybody else who is not hurting devotees, or not into means they are not doing anything for devotees, and but he is not surrendered to Krishna. In that case, he hates, or what is the scenario?
What's your question?
Okay, I'll try to repeat. I'll try to shorten it. So Krishna doesn't hate or like anybody. but he hates or he tries to give a trouble whoever is troubling a devotee. Means devotee, the definition of devotee, what I know is whoever is surrendered to Krishna. So who, for the people who is not troubling a devotee, so Krishna doesn't hate him, and Krishna will not give trouble to him. In that case, what is the status of them? What is the status of whoever is not troubling a devotee and they are into their own world, that is sense gratification? Or
those who are off into sense gratification are controlled by the material energy, and Krishna says mogasha mogakarmano mogajnanavichetasa raksasimasiram chaiva prakriti mohinim shrita, that these wayward souls become bewildered because they're not devotees and they're not connected to him, and he has compassion for them. Just like when Lord Chaitanya comes, his mission is to save the conditioned souls. And when Krishna comes to this world, he has affection for everybody because he shows his pastimes just to attract those souls who don't know about him, who aren't devotees. And he manifests the whole world in his Srishti Lila. When he creates the material world, it's to give the souls a chance again and again to come back to him, because he knows they can't be happy in the material world. And they're his angas. Actually, Krishna says, mamai vamsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana, that the souls are actually my parts. And so do you care about your index finger more than you care about your big toe? Or do you care about them equally? Can I have either one of them? You won't give them up, right? They're part of you. They're your angas. So he cares equally about all living entities. And he has this feeling of deep compassion to make sure that the living entities can come back to their original position. That's why he performs his pastimes. That's why Vyasadeva comes and makes the Vedas. Maya mugda jivaranahi swata krishna gyan jivare kripa koil krishna veda puran. That's out of mercy. Vyasadeva compiles the Vedas because living entities are bewildered by ignorance since the time immemorial, and he wants to see them come out of it. So Krishna is called, hey Krishna, Karuna Sindo, Dina Bando Jagatpate. He's the friend of everybody, and he's actually he's an ocean of mercy. And so that's his nature. His nature is that he's full of mercy. He wants to give everyone an opportunity to come back home, back to Godhead. And those who are fortunate, who come in contact with devotees and they gain some sukriti, and they begin to worship Krishna, then they become even more fortunate, because as they come closer to Krishna, Krishna gives them all facility to remember him and to serve him, and he protects them particularly. He's protecting everybody, but some people don't take his protection. I mean, the sunshine is full of vitamins and you get health, vitamin D, from going in the sun. But if I go in my house and I close all the windows and the shades and I don't let the sun in, then whose fault is that? I'm serious. Whose fault is it? It's my fault. So, if I don't take advantage of Krishna's outpouring of mercy, then it's my fault. But Krishna never stops giving opportunity for those souls who have become seemingly disconnected because of ignorance, to give them a chance, an opportunity to come back to him.
About the sunlight.
Yeah.
So sunlight, we need only how much hour is required. If it is more sunlight, it burns. So you want to talk about that?
Yeah, you should wear sunscreen and in moderation, go in the sun. Don't get sunburned. But definitely don't stay out of the sun, otherwise you're going to have a vitamin D deficiency. Right? Right, doctor?
Without sunlight, yes.
See? Confirmed. All right. pass him the microphone. Rakshit Jariwala Prabhu has some points.
Yes, following up on that question, we also hear in Shastra that Krishna is also neutral to certain things. So I tried to seek clarification that when it is said that Krishna is neutral, then he is neutral then to activities, not as such to people. Would that follow then? Like materialistic activity. When people engage in different materialistic activities and they reap certain reactions, Krishna says, that's your action. I'm not involved in your dealings there. And so it is said that he's neutral. So there, the context of neutral is with respect to activity, not the person per se, because it seems that even people engage in such activities, Krishna is still empathetic to them. Would that distinction apply, that his neutrality is to the activity but not to the person?
Well, let me put it like this. Krishna gives independence to the soul. That is, he allows living entities to make their own choice. And he doesn't interfere with that choice. And that's why there's a pure love. Possibility for pure love only exists when it comes by one's volition, free choice to love. So he doesn't interfere with the living entity's choice to go in the dark room and shut out the light. And what happens because of that, the reaction, which is natural when there's a shadow, you know, when you live in darkness, when you turn your back on the sun, there's going to be a shadow and you're going to have darkness. So there's a reaction to that. And Krishna isn't responsible for that. It's my responsibility, the reaction that happens because I turn my back on Krishna, because I turn my back on the light. It's my responsibility. But that's good news, since it's I therefore have power to turn around again. If I was being afflicted unnecessarily or unjustly, then it would be impossible for me to come out of this situation. Narayan. Yastu Narayanam Devam. So, yes, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Nadate Kaschitit Papam Nachayva Sukritam Vibhu, that he doesn't get involved with the... he's not creating the pious and impious activities for the living entity. That's their business. It's my business if I choose to interact with the material nature. Therefore, we have to elevate ourselves. We have to take advantage of Krishna's mercy that he's extending. And he says in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Indriyani priyanyahur indriyebhya paramanaha manasastu parabudhir yobude paratastu saha evam buddhi parambudva samstabhyatmanamatmanaha jahi shatram mahabaho kama rupa durasaram, that you have to see the difference between the lower nature and the higher nature, and you have to elevate yourself by using your higher intelligence, and you have to get more intelligence through this process that we're hearing. It's a culture, right? If you culture ignorance, if you associate with the ignorant modes of nature, then you'll be contaminated and you'll be dragged down, and your existence will be profaned because of your association. And that's what Krishna says, sarasad janma yonisu. The cause of our happiness and distress and our good and bad situations in this life come about as a result of our sangha with the three modes of material nature. Right, Dipesh? Let's hear it. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunkte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangosya sarasat yoni janmasu. Hare Krishna. So by association with the modes of material nature, we take on those qualities. We become contaminated by those qualities. So we have to use our independence to culture vidya. And step by step, inch by inch, whatever it takes, we have to elevate ourselves to this position. And actually, Krishna gives all help for somebody who takes advantage of the mercy that he's extending. I'm going to continue, and please listen for something you can take with you. I'm on the top of page 71 in the Sri Upanishad on 13, number 13, which is what is being listed here as the culture of knowledge, different ways one should culture knowledge. 13, one should not be attached to more than the necessities of life required for spiritual advancement. If you only need two plates, why buy 100, right? 14, one should not be more attached to wife, children, and home than the revealed scriptures ordain. 15, one should not be happy or distressed over desirables and undesirables, knowing that such feelings are created by the mind. 16, one should become an unalloyed devotee of the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, and serve him with rapt attention. 17, one should develop a liking for residence in a secluded place with a calm and quiet atmosphere favorable for spiritual culture, and one should avoid congested places where non-devotees congregate. 18, one should become a scientist or philosopher and conduct research into spiritual knowledge, recognizing that spiritual knowledge is permanent, whereas material knowledge ends with the death of the body. What'd you pick up? What are you taking home? What's going to change your life? Trishab's got something.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Hare well.
I like the point that we should be attached to wife and family as much as the scriptures ordain, which struck me in the sense that we should not be completely attached, and we should also not be completely detached in the name of detaching ourselves.
Yes.
It should be a balance.
Shyamachandra, please grab me the fifth canto. Fifth canto, fifth chapter. I'll read you the quintessential verse which describes how we should be attached to family. This is a good point. We shouldn't be more attached, and we shouldn't care less either, we shouldn't be uncaring either for family. As much as ordained by Shastra, we should be attached. And let's find out, according to Shastra, how much is ordained. Thank you. This is fifth canto. Fifth chapter, which is called what? Do you all know? Fifth canto, fifth chapter is... Very good. 20 points for Rakshit. Give him a hand, a rousing hand. Here's somebody who's got his head in the Shastra. Okay, this is text number 3. Yiva mayishe kritasauridharta jani shudeham varavartikeshu Riheshu jayat majarati matsu na priti yukta yavadartascha loke. Those who are interested in reviving Krishna consciousness and increasing their love of Godhead do not like to do anything that is not related to Krishna. They are not interested in mingling with people who are busy maintaining their bodies, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Mingling is a great word. We'll have to see that later. They are not attached... In fact, look it up now. They are not attached to their homes, although they may be householders, nor are they attached to wives, children, friends, or wealth. At the same time, they are not indifferent to the execution of their duties. Such people are interested in collecting only enough money to keep the body and the soul together. Purport. Whether he is an impersonalist or a devotee, one who is actually interested in advancing spiritually should not mingle with those who are simply interested in maintaining the body by means of the so-called advancement of civilization. Those who are interested in spiritual life should not be attached to homely comforts in the company of wife, children, friends, and so forth. Even if one is a grihastha and has to earn his livelihood, he should be satisfied by collecting only enough money to maintain body and soul together. One should not have more than that nor less than that. Hare Krishna. As indicated here, a householder should endeavor to earn money for the execution of bhakti yoga, shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu smaranam, padasevanam, archanam, bandhanam, dasyam, sakyam, atma nivedanam. A householder should lead such a life that he gets full opportunity to hear and chant. He should worship deities at home, observe festivals, invite friends in, and give them prasadam. A householder should earn money for this purpose, not for sense gratification. So there's grihasthas and there's grihamethis. So the grihamethis are those who are interested in building up their own wealth for their own personal sense gratification. And grihasthas are those who center their home around Krishna. Their house is a little temple. And we need thousands of those temples everywhere. Everyone, every house should be like that. Thank you. Good point. What else did you get from that small section that we just read? He's got one more, unless you jump in. You have the word mingle. Oh, this is good. Go ahead. Don't mingle with... Who shouldn't we mingle with?
Non-devotees.
They are not interested in mingling with people who are busy maintaining their bodies, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And we should not mingle with those who are simply... Oh, there it is again. Simply interested in maintaining the body. Okay, don't mingle. And let's hear what mingling means.
To bring or mix together, so the word is mingle, and the meaning is to bring or mix together with something else, usually without fundamental loss of identity. So it's intermixing.
And where does it come from?
The origin is Middle English, menglen, to mix, from Old English, which is from mengen, to mix, and which comes from Greek, masin, to knead.
To knead?
Hmm.
N-E-E-D or K-N-E-E-D. To knead. Oh, that's interesting. Because you're putting together all the ingredients, you sort of smash them together, you mingle them. Don't get smashed together with people that, unless you pick up the values of people. It's just around this time of year when we're reading Ramayana and we hear about how Kaikeyi and Mantra interact, and Kaikeyi starts off all cheerful about how Ram's coronation is going to take place, and then a few minutes later she becomes morose and determined to kick Ram out into the forest and so on, mingling with Mantra, who had given her misdirection, caused all kinds of problems. Anything else you heard in the section we read? What struck you? Practical thing, Dikshit.
There are many situations we face in life. Like, we may be happy sometimes, like, with the situations, we should not treat them as, like, happy situations or situations which create distress, because everything is by mind. This tells that. That is something that's very inspiring.
Desires and undesirables. You shouldn't be disturbed by those things that come, right?
Yeah. Things come, I mean... Yad yad bhavatu tad bhavatu bhagavan purva karmana rupam. Kulshekhar Var says that. I mean, things come according to your past karma, and that's the platform of self-realization, understanding. That's submission to the Lord. Being humble before the Lord, saying that it came because it's my previous karma. And by being happy or distressed, you're not being in that platform.
Thank you. Nice point. So that's how we should interact with desirables and undesirables. We should take them as a product of our previous activities in the material world and not be elated or disturbed or morose in either way. Okay? Did you get anything else? Yes, Krishna Prana.
I was attracted to number 17, which is... one should develop a liking for residence in a secluded place with calm and quiet atmosphere favorable for spiritual culture. And one should avoid congested places where non-devotees congregate. Mm. That sort of ties in with what you'd already said.
And what attracted you to that?
It just seems like if anywhere we're going in this spiritual practice, that description seems like that's if you're going to... If you're going to cultivate spiritual knowledge, then this description seems like that would be a place to do that. And I think in my own life, I'm trying to weed the garden of the congested places.
Yeah. So it's a practical realization you've had. Interesting that our definitions of silence, of living in a secluded place, can also include talking and living amongst many people. That is, in the sense, you could talk about Krishna all day long and you're still silent, materially silent, because you're not saying anything that's materially reactive. It's all about Krishna. And you can also live amongst bhaktas. And because you're living amongst devotees, you're in a secluded place, practically. Okay, there was a couple more. Malini.
Hare Krishna. The number 17 also, I was just thinking that living in a calm and quiet atmosphere is favorable for spiritual culture. I was just thinking that at my workplace it's very, very crowded because now everybody wants an agile environment, so everybody's just sitting on one table. So there is constantly disturbance and nobody seems to be bothered by that. But it bothered me a lot, so I bought a headset where I put them on so that I want to block the sounds, but that didn't help. But when I turn Kirtan on, then I'm completely blocked from all the sounds, and people come and they call my name, but I don't hear it. So they come and tap in front of me, and then I notice that they're there. But I feel that even at work, you need some calm and quiet atmosphere, which is very conducive to spiritual.
Very practical. Everyone can try that at work tomorrow. Someone else had their hand up. Oh, Shraddha, yeah.
So, Prabhuji, this is from your previous round of reading. So that is number 4.
Yes.
Which is one should learn forbearance even in the face of provocation from others.
Mm.
And so, I mean, usually it happens that you start the day with thoughts that I'll be calm and quiet and I won't be aggressive towards others. I will not do this, I will not do that. But then sometimes the stimulus comes from outside. Like you enter office and there are a lot of reactions or provocations coming at you by way of telephone conversations or emails and things like that. So, and sometimes people provoke you just to pull you down. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that we need to stay calm and quiet even in such a situation. And I always think that between stimulus and the response that we give, we have the freedom to choose what we're going to do. Although it is a very fraction of our time, but we need to focus on that, think a little bit before you react.
Yeah, nice points. I had some realization about this calm and quiet period, and that is that early in the morning, generally the things settle down because the mode of passion has dissipated to some degree, especially around the Brahma Muhurta hour, the Brahma Muhurta period. That hour and a half before sunrise is really beneficial. And I have an expectation now that some kind of information is going to come through one of the ports. There's so many ports now. I can count, like, there's Skype, there's email, there's texting. And online, if you happen to be online, I mean, it exposes one to numerous avenues of attack. Now there's pop-up messages, from other people on the other sides of the world.